football doing your head in this summer? Well, L'Oréal Paris has your back. Or should we say your hair? Because every missed goal, foul, penalty and minute of extra time, and don't even get us started on VAR, leads to stress, and stress leads to hair loss. LV's Growth Booster fights hair loss, so you can keep your hair on whatever the score. L'Oréal Paris LV's Growth Booster. Keep calm and keep your hair on. Shop now at Amazon, Boots and major supermarkets.
Busy routines can make it hard to focus on your health goals, but MedExpress offers a simple way to explore weight management treatment online. Complete our short eligibility consultation with no need for face-to-face appointments or travel. If eligible, treatment is delivered discreetly, with UK-registered clinicians offering support along the way. Visit medexpress.co.uk/podcast to get started today.
Hey everyone, Sadia Khan here. Welcome to Immigrantly. Before we get into today's episode, I want to say this one is a rerun and I'm bringing it back because it deserves a second listen. When I first sat down with Beatrice Noor, creator of the podcast In Between Ish, and someone who was born in France, raised between Brazil and Egypt, and has called Dubai home for nearly a decade, I had no idea how deep we were going to go. We talked about what it means to reject your own heritage and slowly find your way back to it. How belonging is not something you arrive at, but something you negotiate over and over again, across cultures, languages, and life stages. Beatrice said something in this conversation that I still think about. She said she's most comfortable being in between-ish. Not choosing sides, not owning anyone, a full allegiance to one identity. And I think that's a kind of freedom a lot of us are still walking towards. If you're listening to this for the first time, welcome. And if you have heard it before, I promise you'll catch something new. So without further ado, let's get right into it and come back next week for a new Immigrantly episode. Beatrice, you are probably the first guest I'm interviewing from Dubai. So, hello, Dubai.
Hi.
Immigrantly has gone international. Why not? I mean, we have interviewed people from the UK and Canada, but Dubai, that's far.
Yeah, it's halfway across the world.
So, how did you end up in Dubai?
I ended up here for love. I was in a long-distance relationship for a long time, and then Dubai was an area where we could like close the gap. And that's how I ended up in Dubai. But yeah, I've been here for this summer, it'll be 8 years. And before that, I was in France. I was studying and working there. And before that, I was in Egypt. And before that, I was also in France. So it's been a bit of a back and forth between France and Egypt and Brazil in the middle as well. And now Dubai is home. As home as the UAE can be for an expat, because like people can't get the nationality here. It's not like in other countries. So everybody's here as an expat. And the local population is actually 12% of the population. So Emiratis make up 12%. I am living in Dubai, but I wouldn't say I'm from Dubai.
Would you call yourself a global citizen then?
Oh, gosh. I have a lot of issues with some of these terms sometimes, like global nomad, global citizen, because I think it idolizes a lot of this lifestyle. And I think the reality can be a little bit more complicated than it seems on the surface. Like, I feel like a nomad and global citizen is such a polished way to put it. Whereas I think this lifestyle where you are away from roots, you are away from family, intentionally, sometimes, you know, it depends on how you end up in certain places, can be difficult. And I don't think people like focus enough on that part of it. And I don't think it's such a polished, it looks very glamorous from the outside. The reality is a bit different, you know, like everyone has difficulties, whether you never left your hometown or whether you've made like 20 places home.
That's such an important and profound observation. And what's fascinating is how we use different terms and what emotions they evoke, right? Expat is glamorous. It's supposed to be glamorous, but then immigrant identity is so tabooed. And most of the time, that identity is equated to otherness or being othered or lack of belonging, which as an immigrant in the US, I have experienced. It is such an interesting juxtaposition of how we use different terms, how these terms are used for different identities, and how they evolve based on who these terms are representing. But you're absolutely right, Beatrice. Being away from home is not easy. And then eventually the definition of home also changes, right? Because for most people, identity is so fixed. It's like an anchor, especially when you haven't moved from your home, from your roots. But for people like you and I, it's fluid. It's ever evolving, right? Talk to me about your identity, the way you describe it. 3 cultures, 4 languages, 2 religions, multiple countries. Break it down for me.
So my story is that my mother is Brazilian, born and raised from Rio. So she's Carioca. That's what you call people that are from Rio City. And my father is Egyptian, born and raised from Alexandria. They met on a plane, but they were both living in France at the time, and they got married there, and I was born there. And because my parents didn't speak each other's languages, French was the common language, and France was the base. I lived there for 3 years myself. My parents lived there for decades. Then I moved to Egypt for the first time, and that's where I get the Brazilian, Egyptian, born in France. I'm not French because le droit du sol, like the birthright, but birthright has been hijacked by other countries. But to put it mildly, but yeah, I mean, you know, in the US, if you're born in the US, you automatically become an American citizen. I know that's under fire at the moment right now because Trump and his craziness, but France used to have that, but France no longer has that anymore. So that's why I'm not French, but culturally, I grew up with a lot of French influence. Again, because my parents didn't really speak each other's languages or know each other's cultures, actually. So when I first moved to Egypt, it was also my mom's first time moving to Egypt. And yeah, I grew up there. And at the age of 4, that's when I was introduced to English. So first I spoke French, then I spoke Portuguese. Then when I moved to Egypt, I started to speak a bit of Arabic. And then 4th, I spoke English because I went to an American school. And that's where the 4 languages come in. I feel very privileged that I get to speak these 4 languages. I don't remember a very big struggle to learn it because I was so young when I learned it. But I always mixed languages. And that's very typical in my household.
We all do.
Yeah.
You know, it's so funny. The other day, I was talking to somebody and I was like, okay, what is the most immigrant thing that I do? I mix languages. I speak 5 languages, and off camera, off mic, I mix at least 3 in one sentence.
And that's how it makes sense, right? Because like you need that one word that doesn't exist in these other languages. And then it just, yeah.
Right.
I find it a lot easier to speak to people who speak some of my languages so I can mix. So yeah, that's where the languages came in. And then the 2 religions. My father is Coptic Orthodox. It's a Christian minority group in Egypt, but Coptics also exist in like Ethiopia, a little bit in Lebanon. Like there are different Coptics in Palestine as well. And my mother is Catholic. So I was raised with both of these forms of Christianity that celebrate Christmas and Easter on different days. And they're a bit different, but at the core, it's still Christianity. But there are differences that come out in terms of some of the values, I think. But that being said, I was not raised in a hyper-religious household. Obviously, my parents made the decision to move to Egypt, which is a Muslim country. So I always grew up, I think the most significant thing I was aware of religiously growing up is that we were a minority. But when I grew up, I married my husband. My husband is Muslim. And so we are interfaith. So that's not growing up, but that's also a new part of my identity.
How beautiful is that? When you were growing up as a minority in Egypt, what was that like?
It had its ups and downs, I think, like any minority groups. Like, there are, obviously, there are privileged minorities and there are marginalized minorities. And I think Coptics specifically, Coptic Orthodox of Egypt, have a very complicated history with Islam and the way that Islam spread across Egypt. So this is a rhetoric I grew up with a lot in my household. It's something that I think causes a lot of pain for families in the day-to-day. It's complicated. Myself, as an experience, I grew up very privileged. I think it's important to say that, like, I don't share the same struggles that other people within this minority group might have faced. That being said, there are moments of, like, microaggression, just like any minority group, you know? Like, these things are, I want to say, pretty standard. Not that it should be normalized, but it happens everywhere. And I think just like any minority group, there is a bit of an us versus them mentality that can cause a lot of problems. And that does cause a lot of problems in Egypt, actually. I don't see that changing anytime soon, but I do think it's problematic.
When you say privilege, how do you define your privilege? What was it based on?
So Egypt and Brazil, this is something that we have in common as societies. Like, there's a really strong stratification socioeconomically. In that sense, I grew up very privileged. And also just by virtue of being given, like, these three cultures from birth and then acquiring a fourth one very quickly after, being able to speak languages from a very young age, I think all of this is privilege. Most of the time when I tell people, oh, I'm Brazilian Egyptian, I get different kind of reactions, but the most common one is like, wow, I've never met that before. I'm like, yeah, I had nothing to do with it. Like, I was just born into it, you know?
Does it bother you?
No, it doesn't bother me. I think it's not the most common mix. So I think, like, people do have that reaction, but no, it doesn't bother me. I think it's okay. It's okay for people to be curious and to be like, you know, want to know more. And even if people are hostile sometimes, like, that's okay too. That's based on their experience. You know, there's something that caused that. I don't really take it personally.
Now, you have a podcast called In Between Ash. So let's talk about being in between. We often assume that being in between is a challenge, right? You and I are talking about this. There are challenges that come with it, fitting into multiple places, but never fully calling one place home. I have said this on multiple occasions. I really don't know what home is anymore. New York is home, but then Lahore is home as well. But I don't fully fit in either. People do see me as an outsider in both places. Ironically, in Lahore as well. I've been told that I've become more American, something that a lot of immigrants and their kids get to hear. But if we were to flip that assumption, what do people with singular fixed identities miss out on that those like you and I have?
That's a really good question. I'm not sure they're necessarily missing out. I think they are missing out maybe on, like, exposure to different cultures and different customs and ways of being and languages. I think in the world of being, like, in between-ish, when I started this podcast, and it's exactly what it sounds like, it's just being in between different cultures, I very much had the mentality of, like, it's amazing to be exposed to different cultures and to hold this. And then there's a real struggle, something I always say, like, complicated feelings about home and belonging. And I do think it is complicated. But I've come to realize that even if you come from a singular place and you've never left your place, you're also going to have complicated feelings. And I've come to realize, or to think, I don't know if everyone reaches this realization, but I've come to think or believe that that's normal. Everyone's going to struggle with belonging, whether it's belonging to a group of languages, whether it's belonging to a religion, whether it's belonging to a culture, whether it's belonging to your family or to your gender. So I think belonging is something that everyone across the board struggles with. And I've thought about this. I grew up in the 90s. I'm a Disney kid. And I've thought of like all the Disney movies I watched growing up. I was really obsessed. I think every single story centers around belonging in one way or another. I would go most anywhere to feel like I belong. I think in a way it's a universal quest. And I don't think it's a bad thing to be confused about it.
Why do you think, and you can only speak for yourself, we yearn for belonging? Why is it so important for human existence?
I think it's innate. I think it's in the very fabric of our being as human beings. Like, I think we are social creatures. We do need each other. We do need to feel like we are a part of a group to flourish. Nobody flourishes on their own. Even if we need moments of isolation and we need to like go off and be a little hermit for some time, you know, and just be with your own thoughts without outside perspectives or influences, I think at the end of the day, we need each other.
As we're talking about belonging and all, when I feel like the places that shape us deeply are often the ones that we feel like outsiders in, right? I've lived in the US for over 2 decades. It has shaped me in ways that I cannot even describe. And yet I feel like an outsider. I am feeling like an outsider in this moment. I feel vulnerable, anxious. It's like as if we always long for something that we can never have. Have you ever felt that way?
All the time. Yeah. All the time. Ironically, you do feel like you belong more in places that you are not from because there aren't other people around you that are from that culture telling you that you're not enough. So for example, when I'm in Brazil, I speak Portuguese. In my case, I fit into both of my cultures in the way I look and I speak the languages and still people will tell me, where are you from again? You know, like, but are you sure? You know, these kind of questions, little things, it's not always so overt. Like sometimes it's like just very subtle little things that make you feel like, oh, I am a little bit different. And we are, I think. I think it is easier to find belonging outside. That's part of the reason why I think like Dubai at the moment feels like the place I currently live in, like the very, you know, physical place I live in, feels very much like home. I think it's because there's no one reminding me that like, oh, you're not Egyptian enough or you're not Brazilian enough or you don't do this the way that French people do.
Do you think our brains work differently when we belong to multiple identities or when we are speaking multiple languages? Does your brain think differently in different languages?
I think it does, yeah.
So how do you compartmentalize your emotions across languages? Like, is there one language that is more dominant in a certain emotion versus the other?
I've never thought about languages in terms of emotions quite that way. Like, is there a certain emotion that's stronger? But as you said it, like, it came to me that like, yeah, I mean, for example, like Brazilian culture for me, I think is very tied to nostalgia. And that's because it was very present in my early years because my grandma watched me a lot when I was younger. But I think as my relationship evolves with the cultures that I come from, and it is very much evolving, especially my Arab identity, I think certain things come out a little bit more and more. But yeah, that's interesting about the emotions and the different like languages and cultures.
Let's break it down. You said your relationship with your Arab identity has evolved. How so?
Well, I think a lot of Arabs have gone through an identity crisis over the past 2 years. With the genocide in Palestine, I think that really reignited something in us. That's where it started for me. And I think I'm not alone in that quest of trying to understand, like, you know, where my Arab identity fits in. I grew up very much rejecting my Arab identity. It was not present in my household because I think my father rejected his own Arab identity. And I think we, as children, inherit some of our parents' emotions towards their home countries. So yeah, I think that's kind of where it started. And I was comfortable with that rejection for a very long time, I think. And now I question a lot of the ways that I was brought up. I went to an American school, American teachers, Canadian teachers, strictly only Canadian and Americans. And I was taught American history over Egyptian history. We were not allowed to speak Arabic. I'm sure I got glimpses of what these foreigners thought of the region of Egypt. I don't think very favorably. I'm stereotyping, of course, but like, you know, the Arab world is not particularly portrayed positively in any sort of traditional media.
I don't think that's stereotyping. That's a fact. And how is your relationship with your Arab identity now?
It's changing. There's a lot more acceptance, I think, and the willingness to see the things I feel that can coincide with who I am as a person. Because I think beyond like the countries and the cultures that you belong to, there's also you, you're the core of who you are, your own values. I think that's something that people who are in between us are faced with a lot more than people who aren't. Like, I think when you grow up between, especially in your childhood and in your teenage years, when you're trying to like understand who you are outside of your parents and your family, when your parents come from two very different cultures, there's this constant like battle inside of you. Am I going to disappoint this parent if I align more closely to this value or that value? So I think now I'm trying to mend some of that relationship. So I consume a lot more Egyptian media, not just Egyptian, but Arab media. Right now, it's the month of Ramadan. I don't fast. I participate a lot more than I used to. I'm glad that I'm exploring this part of my identity because I feel like I was taught to dislike it. And now I'm, in a sense, trying my best to unindoctrinate myself and to see the positives in this identity.
This is such an important conversation, Beatrice, because I was going to ask you when you mentioned disappointing your parents. And in my mind, I was thinking you were probably not disappointing your dad because he did not have, as we discussed earlier, a strong connection with his Arab identity. It seems like you've been able to formulate your own relationship with Arab identity. Have you had these conversations with your dad? Does he see it differently? Does he appreciate it?
It's complicated with my family. It's particularly complicated with the Coptic identity. Coptics of Egypt do not believe that Egypt is an Arab country. Other Egyptians too, Muslim Egyptians sometimes also believe that Egypt is not an Arab country. So that's where there's an inherent tension in whether Egypt is Arab, whether it's African. So Egypt itself has a bit of an identity crisis. And I think that comes with having been colonized by so many different civilizations, right? So I think, yeah, it is complicated in that sense. My father will not refer to himself as Arab. My father is Egyptian. In his eyes, he's Egyptian.
Oh, right.
But Arab, it depends on how you define it, you know? I've had these conversations with friends where it's like, Arab can mean that we speak Arabic, which we do. This region speaks Arabic. Very different dialects, very different accents, but we speak Arabic. So it depends on like your own definition of what Arab even is and dissociating it from the Western definition of what an Arab is.
How do you define being an Arab?
At the moment, I do define it as someone who speaks Arabic. There can be a tension sometimes with like Arab values being tied a little bit to Muslim values. And I think especially for minority groups across the region, and it's not just Coptics, it's not just that. I mean, Arabic obviously is the language of Islam, so it is very, very tied to Islam as well. But there are also other values. And in general, I think the Abrahamic religions do have a lot in common. But there's a lot of tension. That's the reality. There's a lot of tension.
I want to pivot to your podcast. I was listening to one of your episodes where you do talk about your grandmother in a very endearing and loving way. And you mentioned something that really struck me. You talk about how you had this conversation with your grandmother in your 20s about adults knowing who they are. And your grandmother's response was, and I'm paraphrasing here, that at 70-something, even then she didn't know who she was fully, which is so true because as humans, we are ever evolving, no matter what our age. How comfortable are you in knowing who you are now in your 30s? And if you were to tweak that question, would you change it maybe to ask something else?
I wouldn't ask another question. I think it's a very valid question. I think discovering who I am and the quest for understanding where I belong is never ending. I'm evolving all the time. My belonging is evolving all the time. I think one of the things through the work of In-Betweenish, one of the things I came across and that sat really well with me and kind of made me feel kind of liberated from defining myself too strictly is the cross-cultural kid model. TCKs, third culture kids, is a very common term that people like, you know, talk about these days. But there are so many other ways that you can grow up cross-culturally. And I think that's something that resonates with me. I grew up across different cultures and that took on different forms. I was a minority. I came from a multicultural background. I had my parents stayed in France, I would have been a child of immigrants. They made the decision to move, so that changed that trajectory. And I'm very aware that my parents' choices like really influenced the development of my identity, which is absolutely fine. Like, that's the same for everyone else, you know? But as a child, you don't really think about that. You just follow along, of course.
Okay.
Yeah. but then, like, as an adult, I think when you reflect back and you try to understand not just who you are and where you come from, but who you want to be as well, because I do think that we have a choice in that. I don't think because you come from a certain culture or from a certain religion or from a certain background that you have to do everything the same. Even when you say Brazilian or you say Egyptian, like how many different forms of Egyptian is there? How many different forms of Brazilian is there? You know, and that the same goes for every country. So I think I'm comfortable in the acceptance that it will always be confusing. I will always have complicated feelings about home and belonging. And that's okay. That conversation with my grandma was very, didn't appreciate it at the time as much, but like it's always like looking back that you appreciate things a little bit more. But I think there was so much wisdom in that. It's like no one has it figured out. And that's fine.
No one has. And I feel like our sense of who we are is a snapshot. It's not our entire life or entirety of our existence. Who do you aspire to be?
There's a phrase in Arabic. I'm going to say it in Arabic. It's mitsalha ma nafsi, which means, I mean, this translation falls a little flat, but the closest thing I can find in English is like comfortable in my skin, comfortable in who I am. Mm. That's who I aspire to be. It's not like a specific person, but it's just like really comfortable, know my values really well, just at ease.
Don't we all want that, Beatrice? We all do. Has there been a question about identity that you've been afraid to ask yourself and others?
I almost want to ask you that question. Am I allowed?
Yes, of course, but I'll have to think about it. Yeah, I don't know. Okay, let me rephrase this. Parts of my identity that I'm afraid to explore are the ones that I feel may be biased in some way. Being a minority in America for so long, I have become so aware of how we unconsciously, subconsciously have these biases and make assumptions about other people. And that was part of my identity before I came to the US. It still in some ways is. There are remnants of it that exist within me, I'm afraid to go there. I'm afraid to talk about those parts of my identity, but I'm working on it.
I think that's really beautiful. Lazu, which I believe is a common connection between us, she hosts the Nuances podcast. She was recently on the Inbetweenish and she said, I think these were her exact words, if you're not actively working on your racism, you're not doing enough. That's probably not the exact quote, but it was along those lines of, if you're not actively working on it, you are a racist. Like, you need to work on it. And I think that's true because we are sponges. We absorb what's around us. And there's a lot of negative sentiments towards others who are different. I don't even think it comes from a bad place necessarily all the time, but like, I think it comes from fear. And I think it comes from fear of assimilation, fear of the other, fear planted by the media. They do that really well.
Fear of the unknown. I live in New York. Right. And I feel like I could only be a coastal immigrant.
Coastal immigrant. I've never heard that. It does, though.
Yeah. I mean, I don't want to go to Texas. I don't want to go to other states that in my mind are racist. It scares me. And there have been instances where I'm speaking with somebody, and if I know their politics, if I know their background, and when I mention I'm Muslim, but I'm fasting, in my mind, I'm already making so many assumptions about what they may be thinking about me. So I'm learning all of that.
You know, I've heard this from other people who are afraid to go to the South, and then they went and it actually surprised them positively. So I think these conversations are changing people. And I think there is more awareness today than there ever has been before in my lifetime, for sure. But I think, like, there's a lot more mix today and there's a lot more interaction and there's social media, as much as, like, I have a very complicated relationship with it. I don't really like it. But I do think it shows you other parts of the world and it makes it a little bit less scary sometimes. Of course, it depends on the content you consume. But I think you might be surprised, you know. But for me, I think when you were explaining that, I do it in my personal life, non-recorded. I question a lot of the values of the places that I come from and the places that I've been exposed to. Because my husband is a third culture kid. He grew up in 7 different countries. So we have these discussions a lot ourselves and with our groups of friends and all about being critical of the places that we come from and seeing where we can reframe things, change things, you know, because we are also a part of culture. But I'm very afraid of doing that on the record.
Do you ever feel that all of us are living in these multicultural contradictions?
Yeah.
It's like, you know, this is who I am in this space, but then I'm a different person somewhere else. And I code switch all the time.
Yeah, but it's just part of growing up across different cultures. You have to. And it's innate. Like, you don't even think about it. When I speak to certain people, like, and it's like a certain accent will come out.
It's the mannerism. It's the mannerism. I kid you not, when I'm in Pakistan, my language, my mannerism, my approach changes momentarily. And sometimes I'm scared because I'm like, no, I've unlearned so much. I cannot relearn it. Has there ever been a guest on your podcast who really challenged your assumptions about identity and you were like, oh my gosh, I never thought of it this way?
I think there comes a moment in every single conversation where the guest will say something that, like, blows my mind. And I write it down. I always keep notes during these interviews. And it's very, I very intentionally make it a conversation with the guest, like, while we're recording. And they will always say, like, it's like a gem for me. And I have, like, all these moments that I've captured from these conversations where I'm like, wow, this has changed the way I think about something.
If you don't mind, can you share a few with us?
There was someone I was interviewing, this was quite a while back, but Axel, and he was talking about, I was asking him, who are you? Like, how do you present yourself? Who are you? And he gave me, like, the geographic locations and the polished version. And I'm like, no, who are you to yourself, you know, when no one is around? And like, just the way that he explained that, and it was not about a specific culture, and it was not about a specific language, that was really impactful to me. It was really beautiful. I think when you're talking about identity and when you're talking about belonging, you can't help but go back to your childhood a lot and reassess things and look at it through your current like lens as an adult, whichever phase you're in life. I think also your understanding of why your parents did certain things probably changes a lot if you choose to have kids and once you have kids. Honestly, every single guest has said something that just made me stop in my tracks, write it down, really meditate on it.
I really like the idea of writing it down. I should start doing that because I've interviewed so many people and there are always these, you know, gems that we tend to forget because we interview so many people. Beatrice, what part of your identity are you most comfortable in right now in this moment?
It's going to sound a bit cliche because it's also the name of my podcast, but I'm very comfortable in being in betweenish, truly. And I get so happy when the term just comes up like in conversation now, because it really is like a term that I think can capture so many different experiences. And I think that's the thing I'm most comfortable in. I am in between these different things, and that's okay. And I don't have to choose. I don't have to choose allegiances. I don't have to choose sides. I need to let go, and I'm learning to let go of like the feeling of letting people down if I'm not enough of this or enough of that by their eyes.
I love that.
But I think that's the part I'm most comfortable in right now.
And in the end, I asked my guests to define the United States of America. As an outsider looking in, how do you see it right now?
It's a loaded question for this moment in history. Like you said, I am an outsider. I've been to the U.S. I've never lived there. I have a complicated relationship to the U.S. Or with the U.S. rather. I would define it as excellent marketing. And I don't mean it in a very positive way.
I know. I've said this as well. The experiment that it is. On paper, it's so good. It's so good. But it's lost its way.
It's complicated, yeah.
It is complicated. And you're right. I mean, if we look back in history, there's so much that we need to reconcile with, be ashamed of, and rectify. This was so good, Beatrice. I am so glad that we were able to sit down, have this very, very fun conversation about identity. Thank you. And as I said, you're my first guest from Dubai, hopefully not the last. Thank you.
Thank you so much for making the time. I've listened to Immigrantly for years before I even started my own podcast. So this feels very wholesome for me to be here and share this with you. So thank you for that.
Aww. And where can people find your podcast?
In Betweenish, it's on all platforms. All podcasting platforms. And then also on Instagram, inbetweenish.pod. And yeah, I share a little bit of the behind the scenes there. Not very good at self-promotion, but we're getting there.
This conversation was all about identity. And I'm so glad I was able to focus on identity the entire episode. Oh my God. Things that I am thinking about after this conversation, things that Beatrice said, things that we talked about, I'm still internalizing them, ruminating over, sitting with those thoughts. If you liked this conversation, please give us a good review on Apple Podcasts. It really helps Immigrantly be more visible to other people who may benefit from these conversations. You can follow us on our socials. We are on every social media platform, on Instagram at ImmigrantlyPods. Yeah, our handle changed and there is a backstory to it. I will tell you guys someday, but yeah, Instagram at ImmigrantlyPods, YouTube at ImmigrantlyPods, TikTok at Immigrantly. You can find us on LinkedIn. And if you want all the information, exciting news, what's happening in Immigrantly space, go to immigrantlypod.com. That's our website. Again, thank you for spending this time with me. Take care of yourselves. Be intentional. Be aware. This episode was produced and written by me, Sadia Khan. The editorial review is done by Shi Yu. Our sound designer and editor is Lou Raskin. Immigrantly theme music is done by Simon Hutchinson. Other music by Epidemic Sound. Come back next week when I have another important conversation to share. Take care.